this week on the Inside Flap.
I actually remember like an editor at like USA Today calling me up on a Saturday. And I kind of remember this clearly because I was not happy about being called on a Saturday and having to work, you know.
Right.
And they told me that this U.S. Border Patrol agent had been arrested for the murder of like four women, and I had to get down to Laredo, Texas.
Like he was eating a piece of grass.
He was. Well, no, it was a plant.
Piece of grass.
There were plants and stuff in the back.
You think some of the Olympic sprinters are fast. You should have seen Andrew.
Andrew yeah. set the
Watch
100.
Watch out, Noah Lyles.
That should be an Olympic. They should put like parental.
Oh,
that's
true.
Parental Olympic
oh,
sports.
I'd love to see the parental.
At the finish line, have someone holding their
I
child like above a cauldron or something.
Yes. All the things we've done for our kids.
Oh, we have.
And there could be a helicopter parent like event.
I love it.
There should
it.
Be, yeah.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated across the table to my right is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
And resting comfortably on the orange vinyl winged chair is Andrew Dowd. Are you not using the pillow?
Excelsior.
Not sitting on the pillow?
There's not enough room for my derriere and the pillow in this chair.
There's another chair next to you if you want to trade.
No, this is fine. This is like a 1970s style chair.
Uh-huh.
Yep. It is orange, and we're talking like bright.
Bright orange.
That thing from space. That
is
the Great Wall of
it
China.
It's nice. This is comfortable as is.
Okay.
Don't need to add any accessories.
No floral settee as we are not recording the snack shack as we try to get the puppy under control. We'll see if at any point, listeners, what you may not know is the last couple of times we've had to stop it, the recording several times as we harness the puppy as he's
Well, the problem that we have is our recording times are during like prime puppy time.
Prime puppy
I'm reaching time. For a chicken chew.
Yeah.
As we
I
speak.
I think that's a good idea.
He likes to bother Andrew.
He does. Wow, because he knows he's gonna get attention from Andrew. That's why. As he's over there. All right. Well, we do have a great guest for you. We're joined by Pulitzer Prize winning USA Today journalist Rick Jervis. He's got a new book out now. And this book is so good. It's called The Devil Behind the Badge, The Horrifying 12 Days of the Border Patrol Serial Killer. It's a true crime book, but we'll get into the book in a little bit, and we'll have that conversation with Rick for you in just a bit. But first, Andrew. All right. Okay.
Oh boy.
Well, no. This is this is.
I didn't expect that.
Well, I know you're the resident expert here on the Ranky Brothers shop.
Oh yeah.
In downtown Littleton. So the other day, Sylvia went over there with her boyfriend, and they got some skinny on the guy. Now you're familiar with the owners of the store there, right?
Yeah, I know Chris Ranky and Not the other, but the Ranky brothers.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So they go in there, and she, first of all, they stop in there, they did a little business. She comes back here to the house. She's like, "Daddy, I got a story for you. Man, do I have a story for you." I said, "Oh, good."
I was not home, so I have no idea what happened. I know you guys were like, something happened or whatever, but I don't know.
I've been saving this.
So can we explain a little bit about what the Ranky Brothers
Go ahead. You're the expert. Tell a little bit about Ranky.
So downtown Littleton, right? And downtown Littleton is a small little downtown. Nice. There's a nice amount of restaurants.
Really
you can walk
nice.
Around.
Yeah.
And it has been, let's say, developed a lot in the last 10 years where they've built like some multi-million dollar buildings and stuff down there, right?
Yeah.
So the Ranky Brothers, they own almost an entire city block.
Wow.
And it is this old warehouse. And they do a haunted house there. They sell like Halloween animatronics. That's where you go to get costumes and stuff like that. But they are sitting on a literal fortune
in
real estate.
You know they are. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
It is a city block for the most part.
Yep.
All right. So Sylvia walks in there And they are approached by a guy in his like in his 60s.
Oh.
And he comes up, and he's one of the owners, and he says to them, he says, you guys aren't getting any trouble, are you? And then he said, how'd you guys meet? Just out of the blue.
Oh, boy.
That's weird. And they're clearly teenagers.
Well, this, they're teenagers. Yeah, and this quickly transitions to,
oh,
well, I have a beautiful wife. Like,
okay.
And then he goes, You probably heard of her. She's pretty famous. She makes more money than I do. And then he pulls out his phone and goes to his Snapchat saved picture. Pulls out a picture of this woman. She, in Sylvia's words, she looks like she's 20 years old. She's in lingerie, and her name is Sexy Bunny.
Hmm.
And he said to them, yeah, she's a model on OnlyFans. Have you heard of her?
What is going on?
Yes.
Huh.
Yeah.
Has he lost it?
I don't know.
Which brother do you think this would be, Andrew?
So there's Chris is the one I know, but Chris is pretty like laid back and conservative. And I can't picture.
No, then it's not him.
I can't picture this being Chris.
This guy said he was in a biking accident 8 years ago and a car hit him. And then he said his brain works fine, but they won't let him drive a car.
Hmm.
Oh.
So he's got existence. I don't think it's Chris. It must be.
Maybe it's not one of the Rinky brothers. Maybe it's just an employee.
But she said, he said he was one of the owners.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. He also asked them, he said to them, hey, you kids get high?
What?
Yes.
Yeah.
And he said, if you turn to page 22 of Hemp Magazine, you could see his where he signed a petition to help legalize marijuana or something, and then he told them that every time they get high, to think of him.
What?
Yeah, that's what he said.
You know, so I would say is, I think to give the guy the benefit of the doubt.
What benefit of
what?
The doubt?
So hang on.
He showed him.
So I'm saying is, one.
I don't know what kind of doubt could he have had.
I think the guy mentally. The true thing is, he may have actually had an accident. He has some brain damage.
That
is true.
I would not trust this guy.
No. With your daughters.
With my kids. With my wife.
No.
I wouldn't trust this guy at all. But definitely raising some eyebrows, that's for sure.
Yeah, showing them a picture of this lingerie model saying it's your girlfriend. She works on, she's on OnlyFans?
His wife. Yeah, he said wife.
Wife.
Chances are there's probably no truth to that whatsoever.
No.
The guy's got some issues or something.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Unless he's paying her a lot of money and in his head it has turned into his wife.
I'm thinking, because, you know, you can get on there on those sites and
that's
you pay to get a private room or whatever.
That's my guess.
And she says, yeah, for an extra $100, I'll be your wife.
How weird.
So I'm going to pull, maybe I should pull Chris to the side.
I doubt it's $100.
And basically
you're right.
And basically see like what's going on there.
Because I don't think he should be going up to teenage, especially a teenage girl.
No.
She's 18, thankfully. But
she didn't necessarily look 18, though.
No.
Like, you can't tell.
You can't go up to anyone. You shouldn't go up to me and say, hey, look at this. There's my wife on OnlyFans.
You also shouldn't ask teenagers if they get high.
No.
And what I would say is for a Halloween animatronics costume store,
uh-huh,
that's the wrong kind of creepy.
It is the wrong
kind of creepy.
I've encountered a younger fella in there who quite honestly gave me the creeps.
Really?
Yeah. And he did a magic trick.
Oh, yeah.
I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I won't say much more, but I think he also might have something going on.
People who come up and start doing magic to you, you know, without...
It was awkward.
Unrequested.
It was really awkward. I was with my friend Renata. Shout out to Renata. And I don't think I really talked to her about it after we left. But I know we both were a little uncomfortable.
Glossed over it like it never happened.
It was a little awkward. Mm. It was awkward. Not a little. It was awkward.
Huh. All right. Well, anyway.
What are they going to do?
Next time you go in there, think about that.
You know, so.
Are they going to sell?
I'm just wondering hey, ladies, you want to see a magic trick?
Yeah. Oh, Andrew, yes.
Yeah,
you want to see something disappear?
That's it, exactly.
Hey.
Yeah. That's right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Also, like, are they going to sell? Like, you're right. Like, very expensive condos could go in there.
Yeah. But I'm sure they do the business, though. I mean,
there's no way.
There's no way.
Right. It's a Halloween
store.
They
could make so much money by selling that.
You're right.
So they make money from two things. One, their haunted house.
Mm-hmm. Two, Peter Dowd buying
that's three. But the haunted house. Three. And then the second thing is the people pay to park in their parking lot.
I don't think that's a big income generator, though.
It's probably like...
It's something.
It's something.
It's something.
Because they clearly own, they own the
premium
land.
There. Yeah. But $5 here and there for...
I've heard that... You know, I've also heard... I think they own other buildings in downtown Littleton. Is that possible?
It's possible.
Because I heard someone say that they were their landlord, I feel like, in one of the shops I was in.
So... Huh.
I don't know. Just be on the be aware next time you go in there with Peter. If you see owners like he got him in the in one of the aisles, you might want
to. I do not let my kids out of yeah.
That's good.
No, it's a weird spot too. We actually lost Sylvia in there.
Did we?
Yes.
Oh, wait, you mean during the haunted house?
During the haunted house, we didn't know where she was.
She turned around and ran out.
She ran out, and then we finished. We went through the haunted house.
That's true. I forgot about
that. And then she was missing.
Yeah.
And we went outside. We looked around. It was freaky.
But she was sitting with one of the owners. Could have been this guy.
Well, she had done a tour, a lights on tour, with a small child and one of the owners.
Yeah. And she was not a small child either.
No.
She was old enough not to have gotten so frightened that she couldn't handle a little haunted house.
I think she was 16.
Mm. Oh, jeez.
No joke.
Oh,
boy.
And she had no problems doing the lights on tour. She's like, sure, that sounds great.
Yeah, turn on all the lights. Let's walk through it. You can show me how the fudge is made. All right. Anyway, Laura, how's your week been?
Oh, it's been good. So we have a countdown until we drop Sylvia off at college.
It's countdown until Dave goes back to work. And, 5 days. 5 days.
11 days for Sylvia. Mm-hmm. Probably 10 or lower if you're listening to this. And
lots of countdowns.
Our next door neighbor has a child that's going to see you at the same time. So they'll both be incoming freshmen.
That's right.
And she's like, hey, we had a really great block party last night, by the way. It was awesome.
Right.
With our neighbors, which I've never had one before.
No, it was really nice.
And it was, I didn't expect anything much, and it exceeded. Hmm. I guess that's the secret.
Well, yeah,
secret.
It's hard to blow
I wasn't looking forward to it necessarily, but it turned out to be awesome.
Yeah.
But she got me onto this Facebook page for parents of the class of 2028 for CU Boulder. Mm-hmm. And it has provided me with so much entertainment. I cannot tell you. It is so many. There's a couple things happening. I'm pretty helicoptery. Mm-hmm. I don't come close to the helicopters that are on this 2020.
Oh, really?
I don't even come.
And these are kids. Wait
I'm
a second.
Not, I might not even be in the same solar system.
So these must be kids that are getting ready to enter elementary school and their parents are.
It is unbelievable to me.
High school?
It is.
College?
The things that are going on this, like you would think that the parent is going to the college. And part of it is, it's like one of them was, my son doesn't check his college email and he missed this, or I don't know how to get online to my son's email. Like things where
it should be the
kid
doing it.
Should figure this out.
The 18-year-old going into college, it should be the kid.
The 50-something parent should not be figuring this out. Mm-hmm. And it's over and over and over again. And then one guy for kicks on some of these posts where it's a mom trying to manhandle, usually a son, sorry guys, into focusing on stuff. Some guy has been putting thoughts and prayers.
Thoughts are now.
And
like
that's his
snarky
comment.
That's
and
funny.
I see him every once in a while on the thing. And it makes me laugh every single time.
My kid can't find parking at CU.
It's
thoughts and prayers.
Bad.
That's
it's
good.
Just the thoughts and prayers. So and then it's moms.
These, are these anonymous posts? Then you can log
no,
in.
No, I see
what?
Their names.
Oh, because it's Facebook.
It's Facebook.
Oh.
So I don't see you as a helicopter parent.
Okay.
Right? And I know when my kids go to summer camp.
Thank you, Andrew. Like, that's the kindest thing you've ever said to me.
Yes. Well, like Katie so and I, and I let the kids call me overprotective dad.
Yeah, I'm hypervigilant.
But I'm really not.
I'm hypervigilant.
Yeah, and I may be more along those lines, but I also foster that image with the kids. But I'm really not like that overbearing.
Yeah, I've seen you hide. The fastest I've ever seen Andrew is high-stepping across a backyard as he saw his infant son, Dashiell, look like he was eating a piece of grass.
He was. Well, no, it's a plant.
Piece of grass.
There are plants and stuff in the backyard.
You think some of the Olympic sprinters are fast. You should have seen Andrew.
Andrew set the 100.
Watch out, Noah Lyles.
That should be an Olympic. They should put like parental.
Oh, that's true.
Parental Olympic sports.
I'd love to see the parental.
At the finish line, have someone holding their child like above a cauldron or something.
Yes. All the things we've done for our kids.
Oh, we have.
And there could be a helicopter parent like event.
I love it.
There should be, yeah.
So
let's get on that.
So my kids go to summer camp, but one of the moms was dropping off at summer camp. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, you know, you send your kids to summer camp. It is a growing experience. They have to stand on their own 2 feet. Well, this mother didn't really quite get that. So she rented a cabin next door to where the summer camp
Stop
was.
It.
What?
Stop it.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. That,
all right. That takes the cake.
I don't know what category you would put that in, but
that takes the
s'more.
I mean,
there's
right
some parents
there.
Out there that just can't really just can't let go.
Wow. Mm.
Yeah.
And it's like it's in full bloom right now.
I had to get
CU
on this
parents
page.
It is so interesting. The other thing that is going on that annoys me so much are the weird humble brags, not really even humble.
Oh,
the bragging that is going on about, like, one woman's like, my child only has 12. She's taking 12 credits. Does anyone think that's a problem? Blah, blah, blah.
Oh, no. Mom's getting on.
And so then they're like, 14 to 16 is considered full time if you want to graduate and blah, blah, blah. And then my kid had 22 credits from AP stuff. So he's, you know, he's doing this and he's doing that and he's able to get this. And then my kid has 16 AP credits. So they're able to. And it was on and on with the AP credits, on and on and on. And then finally, the poor woman wrote back and she's like, well, for the record, my daughter does have 14 AP credits. And
of
I was
course.
Like, this
no,
lady,
she's, got a,
she's lying
she's
through her
in.
Teeth.
She's lying. But how long did you spend on this site? Do you think?
Every single day, I log in to bring myself joy.
That's why I can't do it.
Then
I
the
can't
other
do it.
Thing I've been enjoying.
It's like the next door neighbor website. I can't or
this
whatever.
To me. I don't like next door neighbor at all. Nice. This the next door neighbor really gets under my skin.
Yeah,
but this Facebook parent page,
I'll have to take a look.
It brings me joy.
Okay,
it is so enjoyable, and some of it is like pretty like, hey, we live in Washington D.C. My son tells me he does not need a coat. Do we need a coat for him? He's coming home in December.
Yeah, because the internet doesn't tell you what the weather's like
and so,
in any month.
But the funny thing is, it's all these Coloradans with, no, you don't need a coat here till January and February. And then other people like, my God, it snows at Halloween every year. You needs a coat. Other people like, I get by with a vest.
That's why you never get on a message board and ask a message board. Do a little digging.
I love it so much.
That is pretty
funny,
but
though. Then you do feel like there are parents who, like, for instance, I've seen at least two parents whose kids are coming from India, and I can't imagine how terrifying that would
Whoa,
be.
Yeah.
And they're asking normal things like, hey, cell provider, who would you recommend, AT&T or Verizon?
Oh, okay. Well, that's
so
a
like,
normal
like
question,
normal
yeah.
things, or people like, hey, I'm coming for parents weekend. All of the hotels in Boulder are booked. Mm-hmm. Where else can I stay? It's people who don't know the area. Are
well, asking. And that would make sense to ask
and
people.
And then there's
who know
a
the
ton
area.
Of questions like that you could very easily look up with a Google search.
Why? Well, I never understand why people
if you
don't
just read
yeah.
the print.
Yeah.
You could.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
So that's been
okay.
That's been unexpected joy.
That's good.
So thank Always, you. Thank you, Carolyn, our next door neighbor, for
shout
putting
out
me on
Carolyn,
that.
Yeah.
She did post something.
Oh, no.
And it was about the book situation. There's a weird book situation at CU. But no one really answered her question.
So, oh, okay. Well, yeah. That's nice.
They get off topic pretty quickly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's been fun. So, Andrew, how have you been?
Well, it's the usual. And so, you know, it's that time of the year where, let's say we had my fourth grade daughter went back to school today.
Yeah.
So today was her first day at school. And so she had sort
I saw
of,
the pic
yep,
your wife so she, put up.
Douglas so, County, go back early.
So my daughter 2 weeks ago got her hair cut short, mm-hmm. pixie style.
Andrew, you noticed that. Andrew got it cut short.
Yeah. Well, I said, yeah. So anyways, so cut short, but it was long enough she could donate it to cancer.
That's great.
To making wigs for cancer. Mm-hmm. So they had a back to school day yesterday where it was just like going back to meet the teachers. So, you know,
oh,
so,
before like the yeah.
Those are so
start.
Great for yeah. elementary
That's
kids.
Really
I love it.
So they got to meet good. The teacher. So Mary Kate goes in there. A boy from her class looks at her and he's like, Mary Kate? Mary Kate? oh, look at your hair. Oh, it look, you know, it looks great, Mary-Kate. So then the boy is following Mary-Kate around. Hey, everybody, look at Mary-Kate's hair.
He's helpful. Oh, no. He's helpful. He's so helpful.
Hey, everybody, have you seen Mary-Kate's?
What is he doing?
Did you have to buy a wig on the way home?
No. No, so it'll be interesting.
What
to
is
see.
This child thinking?
I don't know.
He's giving her a complex, so, is what he's
so
thinking.
Anyways, so there's that. Now,
he's a helper.
Peter goes back to school tomorrow. So
oh,
our,
wow.
So our
staggered
seventh grader, he goes back to school tomorrow.
You have kids in three different schools, two different school districts.
Yep, and three different,
that's right.
And three different like schools. And so then Dasher goes back to school. Our high schooler goes back to school next week. But he's commuting. So basically, we have to drive him, you know, 30 minutes one way and wow. 30 minutes back.
Wow.
But because we have to drive him, it completely changes the dynamics of dropping and picking our other kids off,
I can't
too.
I can't imagine.
And then on top of that, I'm supposed to start student teaching at a school, which has not been named yet.
Here's your,
this is
here's
so
your
crazy.
53-year-old student teacher.
Yeah, yeah.
He actually that's is gonna, busy. I will give him that. Yeah. I would say uh-huh. you're busy right now.
You know, picture Robert De Niro in The Intern. Mm.
That's right.
That's
yeah.
that's me.
Okay.
You know, that's me. Okay. But
well, you're not the only one doing
Michelle
that,
Pfeiffer so. And yeah. Oh no, he was The Intern. That is a good yeah. yeah you're right.
So, but I will supposedly be driving in exactly the opposite direction of like where my kids go to school. So we're just, you know, my wife, she doesn't work, but we're just
outside the home.
You know, but we're just waiting
outside the home.
Well, the problem is you got to be in three places at the same time. That's
there
well,
is
that's
a
the
school
problem.
Bus. You could put the little
yeah,
ones
the
on
little
the school
ones
bus.
Have a school bus.
We could, but it's part of his like for Peter to be on the school bus, who's taller than his dad. Not a big deal, but for the sister, you know, for the fourth grader, you know, I mean, and there's people doing construction, and there's white panel vans driving up and down our neighborhood.
Oh, okay. Oh, you don't want her what? Waiting at the bus stop.
No.
I don't blame you about
by,
that.
By,
honestly, that seems like that's where kids get snatched right now.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's what you see.
And I don't want to.
Unless it's a big bus stop group, I bet your neighborhood probably has a ton of kids.
Oh, and they do, but you can't count on the kids to be responsible. I mean, if somebody comes up and wants to grab a kid.
Yeah.
You can't trust elementary school students to like protect
oh,
each other.
Oh, it's terrifying.
So
yeah.
In any event, just like is where things are, you know, we're it's sort of the quiet before the storm, and we just have no idea. Like a week,
well,
2 weeks
you better
from
figure
now,
it out now.
Yeah, yeah. I have no idea.
Get an Uber, stick Dashiell in an Uber.
Is there any there's no one else that goes to Dashiell's new high school that could commute with. There isn't anybody down there, is there?
Not that we know of.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be great if we could find like a carpool. I mean,
yeah.
And the thing is, maybe we could find a teacher or something that lives out our way. But that's also kind of a no-no as a teacher and
yeah,
a student.
No,
riding
a student, you're not
yeah.
supposed to.
No.
You can't. Well, you can, but not.
I wouldn't
yeah.
do that.
Not
yeah.
yeah.
Or if you could drop him off at someone's house and he catches the bus with that kid.
And so
I
that,
guess you can't catch
no,
the bus.
No, he
though.
Can't catch the bus. It's
no.
a different district.
Yeah. Huh. So, yeah. So either way, I will update next week.
Do you have an ETA on when you might find out your student teaching starts?
Could be any day.
Could be tomorrow.
Do you think you're going to start in the fall then?
Yeah. I mean, I think it'll be, I mean, literally
any
could be
minute now.
Any day.
Okay.
So
that's stressful. Do you feel stressed about that? I wouldn't like not knowing.
A little bit. I've invested a lot of time into yeah. this program.
Oh, did you find out about, did you get your test results today?
Nope. And so basically I took.
Give me a no. break.
So I took this science praxis exam. I took it on July 7th, Sunday, July 7th. Today is August 6th.
August 7th. Is the 7th.
Right. I still haven't gotten my scores. They've got the scores. They're there in the computer. But no, I've got to wait.
It's not like they're tabulating.
Yeah,
them.
I got to wait until the close of business, end of day, August 9th. Now, why is it a month and 2 days? I don't know.
So weird.
And so I check every day, and then I get an email message from them. So I like today, I get a message from them from Praxis, basically saying, "Hey, here's how to interpret those test scores."
So you know how to interpret them. You just don't know what they are. That's helpful.
And then they send me a link. Oh, here's how to interpret your test scores. Look, here's this. Now that you have completed your Praxis, these links will help you receive and understand your test scores. Now, if I click on these links, do I actually get my test scores? No, I do not get my test scores. And so I've been like for 2 weeks, I've been getting helpful hints and links about my test
helping,
scores.
And
it
helping
doesn't
other
work.
People, but not you.
But the one thing missing are the test scores. And there's a path forward for me, either way.
Yeah. Well, then you'll know what to do.
And that's it.
Either back, he might have to hit the books again. But the problem is you will have forgotten everything you've already studied.
I may not have forgotten everything, but
yeah.
Some of it. Yeah, it's been
some
a month.
Some of it for sure.
All right. Well, let's get on with the show, shall we? We are joined by Rick Jervis, USA Today journalist, Pulitzer Prize winner. His new book is called The Devil Behind the Badge, The Horrifying 12 Days of the Border Patrol Serial Killer. Now, this book tells the tale, and I absolutely love this book. Highly recommended this one. It is. It tells the tale of the small border town of Laredo, Texas, and the horrifying crimes that took place there over the course of 12 days in September of 2018, when a Border Patrol agent named Juan David Ortiz, a husband, a father to three children, killed four women in cold blood. Mm. This is a nightmare tale, to be sure. And what I really love, because I'm not a huge true crime guy, but what I really loved about this book is how Rick, he puts the focus squarely on the victims. So he tells their stories. And we, you'll hear him talk about how much he talked to the families of these victims. So we feel the pain. We see how hard it is to live down there. We see the tough, the tragedies that they're going through. We see the disease of addiction and the hard lives people in this town lead. Get an inside look as well at the making of a serial killer. This man, or this Ortiz, who started out as an extremely religious family man, and then just kind of see him slowly break down into the monster he became. Fascinating read. And a great chat with Rick. Laura and I talked to him. So I'm here now talking about his book, The Devil Behind the Badge. This is Rick Jervis. Is what I got. I said, remember that.
Well, you are in Florida, so we both went to Florida State, and
that's right.
Yeah, we love St. George's Island.
St. George's Island. Oh my goodness, what up?
Yeah, which is on the Panhandle.
I don't know if this is gonna help or hurt things, but I went to UF. I went to Gainesville.
Oh, right,
well, this interview is over. We're gonna have to. Come on, Rick. No, you're a Gator.
Come on,
what
man.
What the hell?
I'm a Gator. But I actually would say when I went, we used to love going to like Tallahassee because all the cool parties were there, interesting girls were there. We're like, yeah, let's just road trip to like Tallahassee, and so we were at FSU almost as much as like we were in Gainesville.
Tallahassee and Gainesville, they're both really pretty southern towns.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
real pretty.
But let's face it, Tallahassee's better. All right, Rick, let's get to it. I mean, you guys play in a stadium called the Swamp. I mean, come on.
I know. And this. You know,
oh, no. There you go.
I actually, personally, I never liked this.
Yeah.
Right. I was like, this is kind of weird. I don't know if I could get into this. Yeah. I like did it at games, and then I was like, probably won't do it again.
You know what we used to say at FSU? We said, you know why the tomahawk chop is better than the gator? Because you can hold your beer with one hand while you do the tomahawk chop with
smart.
The other.
Yeah.
Although I feel uncomfortable doing the tomahawk chop these days, to be perfectly honest.
Nowadays, I don't really feel good about it.
No.
Like, are they even called the Seminoles anymore?
They are.
Yeah. Okay.
Well,
there's been a lot of change.
Yeah.
They say that the Seminole Nation has granted them permission to use the name, and I actually have an FSU flag. I'm a high school teacher in my classroom, but every year, like, more and more kids come up to me like, you can't fly that flag. I'm like, I think I might have to retire at one of these years. I don't know.
New times.
Yeah.
It's a brave new world.
It is. All right, Rick, well, let's talk about your book, which I absolutely loved. What a story. Man, I could not put this book down. Gripping, harrowing tale. It is called The Devil Behind the Badge. This is a chilling tale of murder, drugs, and peanut M&Ms. Rick, what was it that inspired you to really write this book?
Dave, first of all, thank you for that incredible intro. I'm glad you liked it.
That was so good.
I have like no idea really, you know, whether people will like it or not, would sort of latch onto it or not. So it's just really interesting to like hear insight from people like you and Laura.
Yeah.
So I'm a staff writer for like USA Today, still am.
Cool.
Been employed with them for about 19 years now. And I was assigned this story when it first happened. So when the actual perpetrator in this incident was arrested back in September of 2018, it came across the wires. And I actually remember like an editor at like USA Today calling me up on a Saturday. And I kind of remember this clearly because I was not happy about being called on a Saturday and having to work, you know.
Right.
And they told me that this U.S. Border Patrol agent had been arrested for the murder of like four women, and I had to get down to Laredo, Texas. I'm based in Austin, Texas, so that's like a 4-hour drive. It's not a big deal. But since his press conference was happening on a Monday morning, I had to leave on a Sunday. So I basically went to Laredo to like cover it for like USA Today. And I went to the press conference. The district attorney was there. Members of the Webb County Sheriff's Office was there. Member of the U.S. Border Patrol were also there. They gave the press conference kind of detailing and kind of broad strokes what had happened. But Dave, to answer your question, the thing that really drove me to write this story, to dig deeper into this, is when I started to learn more about these four victims. Hmm. So these four victims, they were all, you know, they're all U.S. citizens, by the way. Like, they're all born in the U.S.
Yeah.
To Mexican or Mexican-American parents.
Hmm.
All of them sex workers, mm-hmm. and all of them had really sort of debilitating drug addictions, yeah. also substance abuse disorders. And so when I started to meet the families of some of the victims, it really inspired me to like dig in deeper, because what was happening at the initial press conference and at some of the initial press reports, there was a sense of like, you know, these were all sex workers. So they kind of put themselves into these situations,
mm-hmm.
and yes, it was a really tragic situation, but it's also part of the risk of like being a sex worker, and that they put themselves into these dangerous situations. And there was a very almost like a subliminal suggestion there that these were people who may have had it coming because of their sort of line of work. And when I was talking to their families, this different picture began to sort of emerge. You know, I started to learn about them and how they were all, you know, like they were sisters and mothers, siblings, all of them, almost all of them. I think actually all of them had aspirations to get off the streets. They all were on the streets because of these substance abuse disorders. And so they were... They basically were like really struggling, trying to get off the streets, but they were beloved. Like, they were beloved by all their families. And it's sort of full a picture of all of these victims started to sort of emerge. And that's kind of when I decided to dig in deeper into the story.
Wow. It is something else. And I'm glad that you spent, because you talk about that in the anonymous, how much time you spent talking to the families of the victims. But tell me a little bit about this town. I wasn't familiar with this town of Laredo. Oh, man, this is a town with a tough history, prostitution, drug use, running rampant. It's a city.
I just know it from Larry McMurtry.
Oh, yeah. That's right. The streets of Laredo, right?
That's all I know. Yeah.
Just ideal conditions for really just the heinous acts that you describe in the book. What is it like down there? What's the vibe in that city?
So Laredo is a border town. It's really historic. You know, it has its roots in the Spanish coming over and basically colonizing part of it. Dates back to the mid 1700s. And it's always been right on the border. It has a history of being like a sort of frontier outpost. It was the southernmost city, the southernmost town for many years of the U.S. It had a sort of lawlessness in the 1800s or so, and it's always been on the border. And But it has this interesting thing where it's also, and I've been down to Laredo, I don't know, more than probably 50 times by now. I've also been to other border towns along the area, mm-hmm. like Brownsville, Texas, yeah. and like McAllen, mm-hmm. Eagle Pass, quite a bit. And the thing about these border towns is that they actually are safe. Now, I think there's this sort of perception of them being kind of like this Wild West, but right. they're actually really safe cities because in these border towns, you commonly have a very strong sheriff's presence, but you also have Border Patrol presence. Right. You have DEA down there. You have the FBI down there. You've got Homeland Security investigations.
Wow.
So you get quite a bit of law enforcement presence down there. And so the cartel organizations know that they don't want to spend a lot of time there. Like they basically want to move their stuff, and move their people out of there as fast as possible.
Yeah.
To points further north. So they don't dwell a lot in these US like in these US border towns, but they're moving a lot of product through these cities, and a lot of that product, whether it's black tar heroin, cocaine, these other drugs, they also tend to spill out into these communities as well. So a lot of these communities do struggle with substance abuse disorder quite a bit, and there are a lot of drug dealers in some of these communities as well.
Sorry, we have a little puppy.
We have a
brand new puppy running around. So if you see us looking around, we're just keeping an eye on the puppy.
I think I spotted him earlier.
He's kind of circling. We had to lock the cat up in our kid's bedroom. So,
it is interesting though, because with all the law enforcement. It does create an environment for someone to operate out of, right? Mm. For a person in law enforcement to abuse that power, perhaps.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. I mean, there is a lot of there's a lot of Border Patrol presence. Obviously, there's a lot of Customs and Border Protection presence, which are the people who man the actual crossing points, the port of entries. So you have a lot of uniformed people walking around and living there and working there. So you have a lot of those people there. And so the probability of some of those people straying and engaging in lawlessness is also higher than what you would have in other towns. I talked to, through the course of my reporting, I talked to other sex workers down there who told me that they commonly, you know, have clients who are people in sort of uniform,
I bet.
Whether they're Border Patrol agents, whether they're, you know, sheriffs like deputies, that it's not uncommon for them to have clients who also happen to be like in law enforcement. So there's some of that happening.
You have so many heartbreaking characters and events that occur in this book. How were you able to, or were you able to disassociate yourself from what you're writing about? Like, were you struggling to like separate, to be back with your family at the end of your writing day?
Laura, that's a really great question. And it's one that I actually did struggle with. You know, I was sort of mining some of the lower chambers of like humanity for this book, meeting, getting to know more of what this actual perpetrator did, but also like, you know, these four victims, like I said, they were all sex workers. So the way to get to know them better is to meet people who actually knew them best. And the people who knew them best were other sex workers, were drug dealers, people on the street, motel owners, and like managers. So I would go to Laredo and immediately go to the area where all these people populate. And so day in, day out, like I was meeting some of these people who were just struggling. They just had some of the hardest lives, and trying to get by with these really strong addictions, plus learning some of the heinous crimes that like the suspect did. And then like at the end of my trip or at the end of the day, driving the 4 hours back to Austin and like going back to my family, and it wasn't always easy, you know. I had to sort of separate the two. It basically helped that I have a really helped that I had a really that I have a really loving, caring wife, Elena, who the book is actually dedicated to. And basically without her, like, it would have been kind of impossible, because I would share some of the things with her, and she would help to like keep me grounded. It also helped to go and just hug my kids a little harder. Yeah. and just be grateful for what I had, you know. Mm-hmm. And knowing that there's so much toughness out there, there's so much struggle out there, sides of evilness, you know, the evilness like you'll find everywhere. Mm-hmm. But just how these people were struggling, and learning more about these victims. Yeah. And how all of them struggled, but all of them wanted to get off the streets also. Absolutely. And how they tried, like, yeah, in their own ways.
Yeah.
And just weren't able to do it, you know. It was just kind of heartbreaking.
Mm. Well, and one of the things that I do appreciate about your book is it is in no way written, some of these true crime books you get, they're written in such a salacious manner that it's all about the killings and the murders. This one is written from the bent of, and it speaks to having spoken to the victims' families, you really empathize so much with these victims, and the way you portray, as you said, the addiction, the tragic addictions that these people are facing, and you do it in such a graphic detail that it's hard to look away from, and really makes you confront the real problem that's going on down there. And it seems to me, you know, addiction is at the heart of it. That seems to me something that was important for you to write the book in that manner.
It definitely was. In fact, Dave, I kind of sped off like into this tangent for like a while. I thought that Black Tar Heroine was going to have its own chapter, like, at one point, because I felt it was such an important part of this book.
Yeah.
Right. It played such a crucial role, you know, because all of these women, three of them were heavily addicted to Black Tar Heroine. Right. One of them was more crack cocaine, but they all had addictions. But heroin played such a huge role that I really wanted to get to know it better, and really like understand this sort of addiction better, you know. I read books on it, obviously, Dreamland by Sam Quiñones was like instrumental. And I went off and met other people who were struggling with like heroin addiction, interviewed them, and I went to like treatment centers trying to get to better know why is it so hard to get off of this. And it just became such a major part of the book. It basically ended up not having its own chapter per se, but I feel like Black Tar Heroine is a major character in the book. It keeps coming back,
because yeah, it was presence such a big is felt part throughout of it. The whole thing. Yeah,
and it's happening right around it's basically happening right around the time that the U.S. in general is struggling with the opiate crisis, right? So so some of this stuff is also moving into the interior of the U.S. But actually, Laredo, right on the border, had its problems too, and it was like just spreading throughout the actual community there. And one of the toughest things with these four victims is that like sort of Laredo, for the longest time, and especially during their time there, didn't have a in-house overnight rehab center. Like if you truly wanted to try to get
that's crazy
get off it, the closest one was 3 hours away in Corpus Christi.
Might as well be in another planet.
In fact, there's like a scene in the book where one of the victims' families, the family of Claudine Loera, literally goes, drives down to San Bernardo, which is like the red light district there, picks her up, puts her in the car, and drives her, like literally drives her 3 hours away to like Corpus Christi, enters her in to this rehab center. Everybody agrees. Unfortunately, just like a couple of days later, she checks herself out and like leaves because it's just like overwhelming for her to be there. But not having an in-house overnight rehab center there, like right in Laredo, I think was sort of debilitating for a lot of these victims.
Yeah,
that's insane to me that wasn't there, and that is just that story about that woman that just so heartbreaking to read about. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about Ortiz. You have a guy that you describe in the book, such a just a real straight shooter, religious guy. Others described him as a role model. And then we watch him quickly through the book succumb to the horrors of war, turns to drugs and alcohol. What a fascinating character arc. What were your feelings towards this guy as you were writing about him?
Yeah, this actually was a really tough one. I mean, it was really challenging. Yeah. This is a nonfiction narrative, so I couldn't just make stuff up about him. Like, I had to actually go out and, like,
that's actual, a problem. Why you don't write fiction, Rick? Come on.
Those facts. Those facts just keep on getting in the way. And so I was like, I have to learn about him. But, you know, I had actually written him several letters while he was at Webb County Jail asking for interviews. He basically never replied. Mm-hmm. I reached out to his wife and some other family members, also never replied.
Yeah.
So like, he obviously wasn't really going to be cooperative.
No.
I reached out to his lawyer too, trying to get an interview. His lawyer was like very nice and very sort of professional, but never mm-hmm. made the interview happen. So I had to kind of find out what I could around the edges, right? And so I went down to like Brownsville, Texas, which is where he's from originally. I managed to like find people that like he grew up with. I found people who were on his swim team back in high school. And this picture started to sort of emerge about this guy, at least in high school, who was a very straight-laced kid. He was a straight shooter. He led his Bible study group there in high school. He was raised very sort of devout, evangelical, Pentecostal Christian mm-hmm. down in Brownsville. But, you know, it turns out later with records that I managed to sort of obtain about him that while he was leading this very straight-laced life, that there was trouble at home, that his father killed himself when he was just a teenager, that his mother was also possibly abused by boyfriends. So there was trouble at home. So he joins the actual Navy in 2001. He's just like 18 years old. And he confessed later to therapists and others that he just needed to get out of the house. And so he basically joins the Navy at 18 years old in 2001, 2 months before 9/11 happens. And so he's attached to like a Marines unit, and they ship him out to like Iraq, and he's in the tip of the spear. He's in Operation Iraqi Freedom as a Navy corpsman, which is like a medic.
Right.
So he is witnessing a lot of the gruesome stuff that happens out there, but still, like there's like no real signs of any trouble, of anything bad happening. Border Patrol seems like a very natural next step for him. Mm-hmm. So he like comes back to Texas. He joins like in 2009, and still he's rapidly ascending through the ranks at like Border Patrol. He's like doing really well. It's really not until 2018, until around February of 2018, that some of his colleagues at Border Patrol begin to notice signs that something's not quite right with him. He seems to be drinking more and more heavily.
Yeah.
He's taking a lot of pills for to try to treat PTSD, headaches, and nightmares. And they basically prescribe this cocktail of psychotropic medication for him, but which which he starts to take, but like he also abuses it. So he's taking all these pills, mixing it with beer and alcohol, and friends and coworkers just start to notice this this real sort of erratic behavior from him, and that's sort of a sort of declining behavior from him starting around there.
Wow.
Yeah, it was quite the tragic downfall that you describe in the book. All right, Rick. Rick, it is now time.
I'm wondering how you're going to segue out of that.
I can't really segue out of that. But we have our segment. This is what we call Quick Six. These are six quick questions, which we find out just a little bit more about you. All right, here we go. Rick, get ready. What is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
Last show. Do I have to give you one?
No, please take it. Take your time. Give us a couple.
So like the last one that I really enjoyed, and this, I don't know what this is going to say about me, but, Resident Alien.
I like that show.
How
that
fun is that show? Yeah. Yes.
I just devoured that. That actual show. I found it hilarious and so well funny. Done and well acted.
That guy who plays the lead, what is his name?
I don't know, whatever. But he's
really good. He is so funny. Forget
his name, but he's hilarious and amazing. He's so good in it too.
Yeah.
But you know, I've also seen Ted Lasso. My daughters are just getting old enough now, so now they're 12 and 13. That we're starting to watch programs with them.
When you can finally do that, right?
It's great. It's like fantastic. And so we're re-watching Ted Lasso with them. They love it.
That's so fun.
A great show to like watch twice because I'm like picking up all of these things that I didn't notice the first time around.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting layered show.
That's great.
But also like the Crown is something that me and my wife also kind of devoured really easily.
Oh, that's awesome. Cool. What fictional world or place would you like to visit?
Fictional world that I would love to.
We'll let you back in.
Yeah, we'll let you back in if it's too dangerous. Right?
Yeah. I would say Westeros.
Oh, yeah.
On the caveat.
Okay.
That like I would have to somehow survive.
Good
luck with that. Around Westeros, right? And be like, I have to have some superpower, maybe like
enchantment of some sort.
On a dragon, maybe.
Yeah,
there you go.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, I would like to go there.
We can work with that.
We'll make that happen for you.
Rick, I'm fascinated by that whole world. I found it really fascinating. Talking about shows that I devoured. Game of Thrones is one that wasted way too much of my time just kind of binging it.
Not a minute wasted. Well, it's a couple episodes maybe we could have, but you just never know. How about this, Rick? Give us one of your favorite movies of all time. One of your favorite movies.
That's really a hard question to answer. I love movies.
Thank you. These are the hard-hitting questions.
They really are. I mean, this is like the hardest question you actually asked me this whole time.
I know.
I would say, I'll give you one or two obvious ones.
Okay.
And then I'm going to give you one that may not be that obvious.
Please.
So, Star Wars Episode 4 is one of my all-time favorites.
Okay.
I think it's just such a perfectly done movie.
Yep.
And the second Godfather is one of my all-time. Oh, so those
Godfather
are the obvious
too.
Ones,
yeah.
Right?
Okay, great. Yeah. Yep.
But one of my all-time favorite movies that I don't think a lot of people share my enthusiasm for it, but Searching for Bobby Fischer.
Oh, yeah. I love that movie. Yeah, that's a good one.
I think it's like one of the most perfectly done movies. Mm. Like every aspect of that movie, the acting, the pace, the plot, it's so well done.
Yeah.
That I often point to it. I'm like, if I could ever, like if I ever get into movie making, I would love to make a movie like that. Mm. It's like a perfectly done movie. I love that movie.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a good one. I like that one. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a good one. How about a favorite book?
Man, it's really hard.
I know. These two are, they get authors every single time. All the books that you've ever read go,
I know.
They disappear.
That's why it's so hard. But I know. I'll tell you this. So there's only two books that I've ever read through, put down, and picked up again, and reread.
Okay.
Like I don't commonly do that. I might read a book again, like months later, years later, but I never read it through, put it down, and read it again. Mm. And there's only two books that I've ever done that with: All the President's Men.
Oh yeah.
Woodward and Bernstein.
Yeah. Yep.
I just couldn't read that one enough.
The Journalist.
And there's this obscure book called The Physician by Nora Gordon. Gordon, that nobody's ever heard of.
Huh.
And it's a book that my brother found. I think I was in high school, and my brother found it like at a Domino's Pizza and brought it home. like someone had just left it and That's just great. Handed it to me because he basically knew that I loved reading.
Yeah, you like to read here. I found this in the pizza joint. Yeah,
that's exactly how it was. And I could not put it down.
Wow.
And I read the whole thing, and I picked it back up and I read it again.
Wow.
So those two books. That's a good one.
Have to get on, to see where that book's available.
Those kind of stories are great. Those books are always better when they just come out from unexpected source. You just find them somewhere in a little, a corner of the world somewhere. Yeah. Cool. All right. It's my turn. Yeah, okay. Sorry. How about this? I've been doing this for 5 years. All right. How about this? Rick, do you have a go-to karaoke song?
That's a tough question.
Keep getting tougher, Rick. Keep getting tougher.
So I'm not a big karaoke guy. I have to admit that.
Okay.
But like if I would,
yes,
like if
I please. Was
like out somewhere and somebody said, okay, it's your turn, you got to do it.
Yeah.
I would probably try to go, I would go to like a Sublime, What I Got.
Oh, okay.
Because
I love
that song.
Great song.
And I've like sang it aloud so many times that I could probably say all the words.
Okay, that's important.
Without even looking. Yeah. Or possibly like a Bee Gees song, like a really sappy one, like How Deep Is Your Love?
Oh, that'd be a fun one. That'd be a real fun one. Yeah. Oh, sorry about that.
Get the crowd going.
He's got the yarn out.
There's yarn everywhere.
I ignored it.
Okay.
What kind of dog is it?
He is an Australian. He's an Aussie Doodle, so... he's trouble.
He's really cute.
He's really cute.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, he's real
How
cute.
Cute.
Yeah. Oh, he's got yarn wrapped around him also.
So my daughters have been just asking me for a puppy for so long.
Really? They're a lot of work. I'm going to tell you.
A lot of work.
We had a dog for a long time and recently passed away. Not recently passed away. The dog passed away like a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And ever since then, she's like, I want a new dog.
Yes, absolutely. That's what we've been in. Yeah.
That's where we are. Yeah, same thing.
Yeah.
We waited a week.
The thing is, our daughter's starting college, so we're going to be empty nesters. So we're oh, this will be great.
This is her replacement.
It does remind you of raising a human baby. It's a lot of work.
No sleep.
No. Very, yeah.
I have allergies too, though, so it has to be. No.
It needs
so
to be a poodle.
Good, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
I have terrible allergies. Any type of poodle mix where it's mostly poodle will help.
Yep.
Yeah. And I have one last question for you, another real hard-hitting
one. There's a tough one, Rick. Get ready.
What book are you currently reading?
So the book I'm currently reading, I read a lot of nonfiction.
Yeah.
Occasionally, I might steer and pick up a fiction novel. I actually like fiction also, but I'm just captivated. I'm captivated by really well done nonfiction narrative novels.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you the one that I just finished that was excellent.
Yeah.
And it was like MLK: A Life by Jonathan Eich.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I've been seeing a lot about that one. Yeah.
So he recently won the Pulitzer this past year for this book, and I read it. It's a big book. It's fascinating. Like if you think that you know everything about MLK, mm-hmm. like you really don't.
Right.
Jonathan brings out like all these FBI investigative files on him and what the FBI was following on him. And it's and it shows him as a flawed like human being, warts and all. And it's fascinating.
Oh,
and it's just super well done, super well written. Finished that recently. I'm now reading sort of biography on Barbara Walters called Rule Breaker by Susan Page.
Oh, that sounds good.
Who is a colleague of mine, like USA Today. And it's a really fascinating read. She does a really good job with it. And Barbara Walters that, you know, broke every ceiling possible.
Yeah, she did. Yeah.
And was just was just like a trailblazer, and it's a really good read.
Wow, cool. That's great. That's great.
All right, Rick. Well, yeah.
Can I tell you? I'm sorry. Yeah. Can I tell you two more books that I've recently?
Oh yeah, we love this. Yeah. We love this. Yeah, yeah, please.
And these are actually books that are more like in my sort of wheelhouse, and these are the ones that I really really love. One is The Wide Wide Sea by Hampton Sides. And he's an author. He's a nonfiction author. He wrote Ghost Soldiers and a lot of other really good books. He wrote a book on I'm gonna blank on Kit Carson.
Oh, it's an okay. Yeah.
Sort of biography on Kit Carson. Uh-huh. But The Wide Wide Sea is about Captain Cook's final voyage.
Oh, wow.
And it's fascinating.
Oh, I'd like to read that.
It just plunges you into this world and on that ship, and it's fantastic. It's really good.
Ooh. Oh, I'd like to see
The that. Other one that I just recently read, well, I finished this one last year, but it's the Wager, which is David Graham's.
Oh, yeah.
Latest book, and it's all about this shipwreck that happened like in the 1800s. Also fascinated, and how these group of people just kind of survived like on this island for months without food or water or anything. And it's like super well done.
Wow, that sounds really good.
Sounds great.
I've seen The Wager out there.
Have you?
Yeah, I feel like Obama might have on his summer reading list.
It's so good. Yeah. And of course, David Grant is a guy who wrote Killers of the Flower Moon.
Oh, I love that book.
Oh,
okay.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
That became a really big movie.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently, like the same people, DiCaprio and the person who made it.
Scorsese? Or is that Scorsese?
Scorsese. Have optioned the Wager and are also going to make that into a really big movie.
That sounds awesome.
All right, very good.
Yeah, I like that.
All right, Rick. Well, absolutely loved your book. Once again, The Devil Behind the Badge. So, so good. And despite you being a Gator fan, it's been great chatting with you.
Same here. That was a lot of fun. Thank you for making it easy.
Yeah, you got it, Rick. Thanks. Take care. Have a great day down there in good old Florida.
We love Florida.
Thanks, guys. Yep.
Bye.
See ya. The Inside Flap. All right, there you go. Thanks so much to Rick. Check out that book, The Devil Behind the Badge. All right, let's open it up.
The library is officially open.
Time for some
book reviews.
Yeah, let's start with
Laura Medicus.
She comes from Silver Spoon, Golden Rule, private school, never miss Sunday church.
Laura, what do you got for us this week?
I have a book called Broken Bayou by Jennifer Moorhead. And so I like books set
good
in
title.
Small. I know it is a good title, actually. I like books set in small towns. I like books set in the Deep South. And I do enjoy the stories about someone who's left that small town they grew up in, and then they have to return to the small town that they thought that they would never have to see again.
Those are always good. And then, they just like Al Pacino and Godfather 2, they pulled me back in.
That's exactly right.
Exactly.
And so this book has all of that. So a child psychologist, her name is Dr. Willa Waters, right? Well, that's a great name, right? Willa She's got Waters. A little TV, a little podcast, a little book fame. She's younger. She returns to a very small Louisiana bayou town to take care of some things that were left in the care of two aunts who recently died. So she returns to this very small town the very day after she goes viral in a video on a morning talk show for something very embarrassing that happened.
Oh, boy.
Of course, the whole town seems to have seen the video. If they haven't,
if someone hasn't
seen this video, they're happily showing each other in the aisles of the Piggly Wiggly.
Sure.
While she's walking by. Some of these people are really happy to see her again, and others are kind of think she's uppity. She got what she deserved.
Now, speaking of viral videos, did you see the pole vaulter who, that viral video?
Which one?
In the Olympics, the pole vaulter who didn't quite make it over?
No.
No.
Wait, the one where it's stuck in an area that you don't want a pole vault stuck?
I did see that.
Did that happen in the Olympics? I thought it was just something that had happened.
Oh, I thought it was an Olympic video because apparently he got some sort of a like proposal, job offer as a result of that.
Oh, really? from OnlyFans?
No, I don't know. It could be from OnlyFans. But
Olympic pole vaulter Anthony Amorati offered $250,000 from adult website after a viral moment.
Yeah. Now, whether he accepts it, probably won't be accepting that offer.
Oh, man.
His crotch hit the bar.
Yeah, it hit the pole, though, that he was vaulting on, right?
Said it hit the bar.
It hit the bar.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, he would have made it over, except that, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah you got to do a little deep dive. That's pretty funny.
That's really funny. I don't know if I've seen that exact one. I've seen something else. Interesting. Mm. I did see the very attractive young kid from Sweden.
Oh, yeah. Mondo.
Mondo. Is that
his
what he goes by?
Mondo, yeah. It goes by Mondo.
Yeah.
Win the gold for pole vaulting. That guy was heads and tails above. Set the world record.
He had like a foot clear in between him.
He was fantastic. In the pole. Yeah. Loving the Olympics.
Yeah. I don't know how. Viral videos.
Andrew derailed the show.
That's okay. Right?
Viral videos are just simply...
Yeah.
It's very... Yes. Like what you call it, zeitgeist, or what do you call it? Yeah.
Yep. It's of the moment. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so Willa notices...
Andrew was 2 inches from the screen watching that viral video.
She happens to notice that there's a ton of press in town. At first she thinks, oh, they're here because they know I'm here. Mm. And they're kind of shame-mongering. But no, they aren't there because of her. They are there because a few bodies have been found in oil drums in the bayou.
Oh.
There's rumors of a serial killer in this very small Louisiana town. Mm. And there's a young teacher that's gone missing. And it all might be related. And it also might be linked to something that happened in Willa's past. Mm. Right?
Okay.
So this is a debut author. Cool. I thought she did a fantastic job. The book has some really creepy Deep South Bayou vibes, which I dug.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
It's got family secrets, mental illness, and a serial killer.
What more could you want?
What more could you possibly want? So I can't wait to read more from this author. She really nailed the setting and like the heavy atmosphere in this one for me. And this one is on Kindle Unlimited right now.
Okay. Very good.
Now, is this author from like New Orleans?
I'm sure she is from a small town.
And I love a book set in that area because I mean,
do too.
A lot of those books ends up getting made into movies and things like that.
Oh, this would make a great movie.
Yeah, but it just adds the Cajun or whatever Creole. It just adds.
It
to
adds,
that.
Doesn't it? Yeah. With the gators and the swamp stuff, like the cypress knees.
Because you
love
can imagine
it.
People just disappearing.
They
in
disappear.
The swamps.
They disappear.
Oh sure, just like the Appalachian Trail or
also,
national
the
parks.
The people who live out there. No offense to anyone listening who does. Some of the people who live out there in that deep bayou, they're a little different. They're
a little different.
They're like our mountain people out here. You know
what
I mean?
We've all seen Deliverance.
They live isolated for a reason.
Like the guy Dave ran into in the woods a couple weeks ago.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly like that guy.
So Jennifer Morehead went to LSU in Baton Rouge.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
Yeah. That's right. I did see that. And it was a Go Tigers with the GEAUX.
That's right. Go Tigers with the GEAUX.
Yeah, but she's kind of interesting because she had her kids... Right? And her kids, I think she's an empty nester. And then now she's written this book that's fantastic.
Oh, well, it sounds like we
have
no
excuse.
So,
the pressure is on for all of... Well, Andrew's got a little
Andrew's got some time before he can start his novel, but we'll start ours next week.
Next week, Dave. Week after.
Okay.
Just, maybe Labor Day after Labor Day.
Sure.
Okay.
All right. My book this week.
Dave Medicus.
It's a bonfire. Turn the lights out. I'm burning everything you love.
Is called The Eyes Are the Best Part by Monica Kim.
I've seen this book out there.
Really?
I've seen the book out there.
Oh, it's so good. Have you guys ever eaten fish eyes? Let me ask you that first.
No, I never have.
No?
Never. I've eaten some stuff.
Andrew, that surprises me.
I'm surprised too. I thought you might have.
I thought you spent some time in the...
I've eaten all kinds of stuff, but
I thought so.
Never fish eyes.
Never That's fish eyes. Huh. All right, well, this book...
I don't know if I would. Unless I had to not be rude, like really rude.
Rat kebabs. I've eaten chicken feet. I've eaten,
rat kebabs.
All kinds.
Wait, could you see the shape of the rat on the
kebab?
Oh,
sure. In China. It's especially. Yeah.
Did you...
Never got around to
Did you
to
have
the...
any mental issues chowing down on that?
Oh, let's just say I didn't eat a lot.
Okay.
But you got to try it, right?
I know,
if one is there, why not?
You don't have to
try it. You do not have to try that. Nope.
All right. Well, this is a slow burn psychological horror thriller with a revenge bent to it. An examination also of what it is to be a young Korean woman growing up in Los Angeles. So our main character is a young woman, a college freshman. Speaking of college freshmen, her name is Ji-won. She shares a small apartment with her mother and her younger sister. Her father's out of the picture, having left the family for another woman. So Ji-won is struggling. She feels a heavy burden to take care of the family, especially her younger sister, as she is the oldest. And then suddenly her struggles get 100 times worse when her mother brings her boyfriend home to live with them. And the real problem is that mom's boyfriend, and yes, mom is Korean, they're all Korean, mom's boyfriend is a white man named George. Yeah, that's right. Yep, not good. We gotta hit that. And not just that, but he is incredibly obnoxious. He is racist. He is misogynistic.
Oh.
He's just a...
He's a delight.
An absolute delight. Hmm. He'll call the girls... He'll call them, instead of calling her Ji-won, he'll call her JW. Like, doesn't take the time to get to know them.
His first name Donald?
Could be. What he does have, though, he's got these incredible, piercing, beautiful blue eyes.
Doesn't matter.
But Ji-won, she cannot get these eyes out of her head. She even dreams
now, Dave,
about these
eyes. I'm going to ask you something. Because you have beautiful, piercing blue eyes.
All right, thank you.
You hear this all the time.
Sure.
Yeah. We all know it.
Mm-hmm.
Did this book creep you out a little bit because of your eyes, your eye color?
I didn't even think about it that
way.
I don't think about it that way. Your book creeped me out. It is a creepy book. Ooh. It's a horror book.
Yeah.
Now, do you two want to get a room or something? I mean, seriously.
I'm not going to... I don't want to go in. I'm not going to get...
I mean, you would agree.
I'm not just making it up.
Andrew's
been looking into the eyes since middle school, so he's
over it. Yeah. I'm not going to give away too much about this book, but I do want to reference the title one more time. The eyes are the best part. Mm-hmm. So it's an amazing book. But it does have very important things to say about racism and what it can do to a person. But it's also a very entertaining horror tale done in just such a unique and original manner I hadn't really seen done before. An unexpected surprise, deeply disturbing in more ways than one, societal and as well as you really get an eyeful.
It's a real eye opener.
It's an eye opener. Yeah. All right. Sorry, I kind of
stepped on your joke.
How dare you?
All
right. It is a true eye. Eye opener. All right. Anyway, check it out.
I'm terrible at thinking those things. I'm not very good at thinking ahead for puns and stuff.
Yep. Yeah. Where's that dad joke T-shirt I got you? You should be.
No, I do. I win. I've gotten compliments on that shirt actually.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get to it. And
I got a thing.
You got a thing.
Okay. So you know how Kamala Harris picked a Midwestern guy, Tim Walz, for her VP.
Yes.
All I see online is, he's got great Midwestern dad vibes. Oh, it's the dad vibes. Watch this video for the dad stuff. I am not attracted to that. I'm not talking sexually. I'm just talking
as
a voter. It's not something. Is it aimed at the younger generation? Is that probably what it is?
It's politics.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you already know who you're voting for.
Exactly.
Right?
So I'm older. It's aimed at the Gen Zers probably, right?
No, I don't think it's that at all. It's aimed at the moderates.
Who don't know who they're going to vote for?
Who don't know who they're going to vote for, and it's aimed like, I mean, the VP pick is basically designed to basically be additive in terms of
in
terms of switching votes.
A little boost, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, so
it's just odd to me because I didn't realize that all this dad stuff was such a thing.
Hmm. What do you think? Maybe it's meant to make him seem younger to appeal to a younger voter.
No, definitely not. He's got white hair. I mean, he's clearly not a young guy.
I don't know.
I just have been puzzled by all the dad
stuff. Something to keep an eye on.
I have nothing against
the
man.
That's the spin. I mean,
don't know much about
that's
him.
That's the spin they decided to put.
It's what they're going
to put
with.
In the guy. So
yeah. Yeah. I do like the spin where he's a cat lover. I did enjoy that.
Oh, that's funny.
But the dad stuff, like, I'm like,
But the cat ladies aren't voting for Donald Trump.
No.
No, they're not.
You know, what's the point?
They're absolutely not. Yeah. You're so right, Andrew. I completely agree.
Well, one thing is for sure, like, this election year is just going to be...
It's going to be entertaining. It's going to be like the Facebook class of 2028 that I'm on. Yeah.
For sure. All right, Andrew.
Andrew Dowd.
There we go.
So I texted Dave, and maybe he thought it was in jest. I asked him to update my walk-up music.
Oh, and you did not.
When did you text me?
Like a couple weeks ago.
Oh. So, Dave. Yeah. Should we all update ours for the fall?
I think we should.
Yeah, we'll get new walk-up.
It's not fall
music
yet, but we can.
And I think what I sent him is a British rapper.
Okay.
He's got a bit of an accent. We'll see. We'll see if that gets updated.
Hey, Medicus, I'm not doing all this.
You know, I'm telling you, I never, just like you never saw the, I don't know, whatever. We'll update him for the fall.
So I've got a fantasy book, and
what?
I love this guy. I love this author. I love this guy.
Of course,
his name is Guy Antibes.
Oh, I'm familiar with that name.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's been a couple of years. Mm-hmm. So finally, he has a new book out. It is called The Wizard Core. And it is in the Strings of Empire series.
Is that core like your abs,
like
or core like the Marine Corps?
Like the Marine Corps.
Okay, that's what I thought.
And this is a coming-of-age book, right? And I have to say, maybe of all like the fantasy genres, the coming-of-age book is probably like one of my favorites.
That's one of your go-tos. You really
I
love that in a fantasy book, too.
Yeah.
It's very appealing.
And I don't know like what it is about that genre. Yeah. Because it's not like I relate to this little boy or something like that.
I think that's such an important time in our lives, right?
Cover. Sharing the cover.
Okay. The cover's a little creepy, Andrew. Seen the cover?
I have. And the cover...
Look at the kid on the cover.
It's not like...
Into the Ranky Brothers.
It's like an actual picture. And you wonder...
Oh, man.
It's like a picture of an actual boy.
An actual
kid. It's an actual boy.
And you wonder...
Dressed in like an admiral costume.
Yeah, and you... Like, and you wonder what's going on. I don't know.
Okay,
and you're right.
I'm going to have to pretend I didn't say that.
Yeah, we'll pretend.
I have to agree with that.
Don't. If you're listening to this, don't look that up.
Yeah.
No, look it up.
Look it up.
But look it up.
And that's the question, is it stands out. Like, I've never seen another...
I would not be caught dead
like that.
I never have
either. On a subway reading a book without... Well, I guess that's a good thing about the Kindle.
It's Kindle.
Hopefully it's his grandson or something like that in the picture. Who knows? So anyways.
Yes.
It's a coming of age book.
Kid. Usually you get the books with the buxom women on the cover.
This is true.
Yeah,
they're embarrassing in different ways.
I didn't say this book was written by. Well, never mind. I'm not going to say
that. Well, we don't judge a book by cover.
Yeah, yeah.
So
no,
we're not going to
judge this book by its cover.
Okay.
So the main character of this book, his name is Quint Tirolo.
The boy in the cover.
Yep.
Okay.
And he is a young boy. He's maybe 15 years old. And he is just coming into his magic.
Nice head of blonde hair.
Yeah. And so, but the one thing is, what I will say
cheeks.
Is, Quint belongs to a minority group in this book, and they are called the Hubites. And the Hubites basically stand out from, like, everybody else in this land because they do have blonde hair, and they have a lighter complexion.
Aryan. They're Aryan,
So basically,
It looks like a young German lad from the 1940s.
Or Swedish,
So he basically stands out, and I would say maybe more Swedish, like in terms of what the complexion like that. So
Swedish.
So Quint, he is from this minority that basically...
I keep staring at this kid.
No, you need to stop.
I'm closing the page out.
Yeah.
So Quint, he belongs to a loving family. He has a loving dad, a loving mom. He has a younger brother. And Quint is a dutiful son, right? He helps his mom. He helps his dad. He is a smart lad, right? And he's from a decent community. But there are undertones in this book that because they're Hubites, they look down on. They don't know that they can actually trust anybody. And trust, who can you trust, and betrayal is something that basically runs throughout this book. Quint comes into his magic. He says, "Hey, mom, look at this. You know, look." He's like, "She's like, I'm feeling warm." And he's like, "She's like, well, try and focus that out your fingers and see."
Oh, okay.
And so, sure enough, he shoots like sparks out his fingers.
Oh.
And the mother's like, "Yeah, I think your magic might be stronger than your father's because his dad has magic, but it's literally just enough to light a candle, right?"
I would take that right now. Like, I would take that magic.
That would be
because we were looking for the lighter to light the grill.
Lighter, yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
It was out in the snack shop.
How practical! How practical would that be?
Yeah.
Pretty good.
So anyways, the dad comes home and he's like, "Okay," he's like, "Quint, show your dad what you can do." And Dad's like, "So they was like, let's go talk to the hedge wizard who is like sort of like a practitioner of magic, maybe not strong practitioner, but generally heals people, you know, and stuff like that. Lives on the edge of the village and stuff like that." So they go and talk to the hedge wizard.
Whoa. Did they get a lozenge from the head wizard?
Yeah, so the head wizard, I'm losing my voice here. So anyways,
you don't say.
I think the head wizard, I think, cast a spell on me. Yeah. So, and
weak-ass magic.
And so the head wizard says, well, can you do this and do this? And so he does. And the head wizard says, well, let me train you. And so Quint doesn't trust the head wizard. And his dad also, they don't trust people. Because they're Cubites, they have learned don't trust people.
Sure.
And so what ends up happening is the hedge wizard ends up telling people that, hey, I've got this boy with strong magic.
Oh.
And basically he ends up getting shanghaied, right? And the hedge wizard gets a big old fat envelope of money.
Ah.
And so, you know, the dad trusts the hedge wizard to teach him, you know, something with the magic. But he ends up, you know, getting taken into the service of the wizard corps.
Hmm.
Now, do you think that Quint is going to be, this is not my usual question, but that's coming.
Good.
That's
okay.
Coming.
Okay, good.
Now, do you think that Quint is basically taken with open arms into the wizard corps?
There's no way.
Oh, here's this kid. He's got super strong magic.
He's a little
magic.
Blonde
he's a bright,
boy.
He's a bright kid. But because no. He's a Hubite, this kid basically gets beaten up. He is in fear for his life for good reason. He gets knocked unconscious multiple times.
Oh, man.
Now, there are good people. There are, what I would say is, in the society, it seems like most people are racist. And this kid, basically, Quint has to watch out for himself. Now, there are good people, but they are few and far between, as far as looking out for Quint and helping him out. And they're not really necessarily sticking their necks out to help him, but they just see he is a good, bright kid. He's got strong magic. And then as he continues to progress, the institutionalized system, right, which is against the Hubites, they keep getting challenged because, like, what do they do with this kid who's got this strong magic and is obviously extremely smart? Because, you know, they keep putting Quint in situations expecting him to get killed. But somehow or another, he finds out a way, you know, to come out on top.
Hmm.
So every time they put him in a tough situation, he survives and gets stronger, right? And so they just keep coming at him and they just keep testing him. So he's just railing against this racist system, right? But, you know, it's not like that's constant. I mean, he does have some friends and some things like that end up working out in the book. Now, the magic in this is called the system of magic strings. And so what happens is the magic comes out your fingertips and you have to kind of like weave the magic.
You got to be careful when you go to the bathroom.
yeah.
Or if you are styling your hair.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Or, you know, picking your nose.
Well, yeah. Many, many different
definitely
things.
Definitely don't want to do that.
So, but it's called, so the book is, your series is called Strings of Empire, but the magic strings come out your fingertips and you have to learn to like
control them.
Manipulate these strings, you know, in order to do the magic. Now,
okay.
My question.
Oh, I'm guessing.
Okay. Is his magic different than other people's magic?
It's got to be, Andrew. It's got to be.
It has to be.
Yeah, well, and so the simple answer is no, it is not.
Oh.
But I don't know that that's exactly truthful.
It's got to be different.
Because because he learns magic faster than anybody else.
It's got to be different.
His magic is stronger than
everybody
else's.
He's like a little Harry Potter.
In a way, without the what do you call it, the laser
the
bolt
lightning.
On his,
lightning
the
laser bolt.
On his
laser bolts. I hate those laser bolts.
But this is, you know, it is a good coming-of-age book.
This sounds fun.
I'm only disappointed that there isn't a second book in the series.
There's not yet?
No. And it's, you know, and it's one of the risks when you read a new book. It's like, well, but there aren't, you know, three or four more books in the series to basically read. And the place where this book leaves off, Quint has basically survived everything.
Oh, spoiler.
Right? But everything transitions, and he now has to start all over again. And there is a bit of prophecy in this book as well. But just, anything written by Guy Antibes.
Is he a fast writer, do you think?
I don't get the sense. I don't necessarily get the sense. He's written a lot of books.
Okay.
I would guess he's written 20 or 30 books. I'm just guessing.
Yeah.
And I did not see like what the Goodreads score on this, but I would guess. Let's look this up. Let's see how good.
Look that cover back up.
I would guess
I'm
gonna guess it's like a 4.5 on Goodreads.
It was about that. It was like a 4.49.
Hi.
I'm not going to pull up that cover again.
That was my foot, Dave. Sorry.
Yeah, Dave can't stop staring at the blue eyes of that.
Can't do it.
I just got a glimpse.
Yeah. But. You know, so A great book. I just wish the other books were out in the series.
Ah, oh, come on, guy. What are you doing with your time?
So The Wizard Corps, Strings of Empire, written by Guy Antibes.
All right, and that's recommended by
Andrew Dowd.
Which means it's time for the
Audiobook
of the Week, and my pick this week is Daisy Jones and the Six by Taylor Jenkins Reid, narrated by a whole cast of characters, including Jennifer Beals, Benjamin Bratt.
Isn't it Beal?
This says Jennifer Beals.
Huh, okay.
Judy Greer.
I think it's pronounced Beal.
Oh,
I don't think you actually
the S is silent?
The S. Pablo Schreiber, and of course, Ari Fliakos. Ari Fliakos?
I don't know. That sounds great, though. I love a big cast.
Yeah, and the reason why it works as an audiobook, in my mind, even better than as a book. I didn't read it, but from listening to it, it's great because the whole book is written as a series of interviews.
That's
it's like reading
perfect.
A transcript of interviews.
Oh, so perfect.
About this band, and you know, and you get a different person reading all the different voices.
This is a Netflix series, is
and
that
it's
right?
Now, yeah, I checked out a little bit of it. It's it's not bad. It's an Amazon Prime series.
Oh, it's Prime.
Amazon
okay.
Prime.
Sylvia and I were in New Orleans, just the two of us, a girls' trip, when they were filming some scenes from Daisy Jones and the Six. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for this book, the author was inspired by the relationship between Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks from Fleetwood Mac. And I found this to be just a very realistic portrait of a behind-the-scenes look at a band's rise and fall, the relationships, the musicality, what it's like writing a song together, the lyrics, the backstabbing, the arguing.
That was
the
famous.
Womanizing.
Yeah.
So, so good. I started listening to his book, and I honestly don't think I stopped it until it was done. Yeah.
Wow. It was really popular when it came out.
It's so good as an audiobook.
I
can't recommend this one highly enough. You did hear just all the people giving their thoughts, and the acting is superb in it. I absolutely loved it.
Now,
so,
are you guys Fleetwood Mac fans or Stevie Nicks fans?
No, but I did queue up some. So after listening to this book, I listened to some Fleetwood Mac.
Okay, yeah.
I've heard all the songs.
The thing is, I've heard it.
Times.
I grew up hearing it all the time. Yeah. So
Katie loves Stevie Nicks.
Yeah,
right?
A lot of women
love the Stevie Nicks.
And I did. I went to a concert.
Oh yeah,
I saw it in concert, but I thought the sound was awful.
Oh,
and it wasn't the performances.
It was the. Was it at Ball Arena?
It was at Ball Arena, and the sound was so awful that my ears were like ringing the whole time.
I've had trouble with Ball Arena. Yeah. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's not.
Yeah, well, Daisy Jones, she's the Stevie Nicks in the book. So it's so, so good. Check it out. And actually, let's take a listen to a clip. This is Davy Jones and the Six by Taylor Jenkins Reid.
She's born with all the money in the world, access to whatever she wants, artists, drugs, clubs, anything and everything at her disposal. But she has no one, no siblings, no extended family in Los Angeles, two parents who are so into their own world that they are all but indifferent to her existence. Although, they never shy away from making her pose for their artist friends. That's why there are so many paintings and photos of Daisy as a child. The artists that came into that home saw Daisy Jones, saw how gorgeous she was, and wanted to capture her. It's telling that there is no Frank Jones piece of Daisy. Her father is too busy with his male nudes to pay much attention to his daughter. And in general, Daisy spends her childhood rather alone. But she's actually a very gregarious, outgoing kid.
Audiobook of the week.
All right, there you go. Oh, yes, Andrew.
So there's another music series. It's called Laurel Canyon. It's a Netflix series.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I've heard about that.
Yeah.
It's the real story of a lot of like famous musicians from back in the 70s. Laurel Canyon, I mean, fascinating.
Do you like it?
Oh,
good.
I did. Yeah, absolutely.
Is it fiction or nonfiction?
No, it's nonfiction.
Oh, that sounds great.
Though. Oh, well, that does sound good. All right. Well, speaking of good, thank you to Rick Jervis for coming on and give his book a try. So good. It is... The Devil Behind the Badge. All right. My name is Dan Medicus. See ya.
Adios.
Excelsior. You know, my wife, she doesn't work.